Welcome to the Angry Admins Podcast for April 7th, 2007, episode 23. Welcome back to the Angry Admins Podcast. Once again, we are here to bring you the latest in gadgets at home,
IT at work,
and where we think information culture is headed. Again, I am Joe Bibby.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
So, we've got some stories this week on the radar. First things off, something I think is pretty interesting. VESA, the governing body for display technology in computers, has approved DisplayPort 1.1. Why is this important? This is basically the replacement for DVI. And I know what you're thinking, DVI, we just started using that, didn't we? But the nice thing about this is more of like an HDMI type plug. It doesn't do audio, which to me is a good thing. You know, you may disagree with me on that, but what's nice about this is it's a DVI sized port, so it's, you know, almost looks like a USB plug a little bit. But what's nice is that, one, it's got the HDCP compatibility, which is bad because it's content protection built in. But it's good because it means compatibility with HD DVD and Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So it makes it easier for your computer to output to a display device for those services.
And my favorite feature, no thumb screws.
Yes. No thumb screws. And a built-in little like push button connector for release,
like a little
which is so nice, which HDMI is missing because... Mm-hmm. I haven't experienced this, but I've heard if it's like a vertical HDMI port and you plug it in, sometimes it will just fall out because the clip just isn't strong enough. So, so pretty nice. You know, you'll be able to convert to HDMI very easily with this port, which you can do with DVI already. But I like the small plug. I look forward to maybe seeing this on some small devices. You know, I could see this on some of the larger cell phones. I could see a nice little port like this, so I can plug my Windows mobile device right into a monitor.
But it's, you know what, it's still going to have the same issue. Is you're still going to, 99% of the time, you will plug it in upside down.
Yes,
the first time.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an electrical engineer, but so I don't know why they can't. Like, so Apple's power port, it doesn't matter which way you plug it in.
Right.
Why can't they do that with this stuff?
But all day long, it's the same thing. If I'm plugging in DVI, it's upside down.
I know.
If I'm plugging a VGA, it's upside down.
Yeah.
My freaking thumb drive's
upside
always
down.
Wrong.
I know, man.
It's like,
know.
What's the big deal? It's a 50-50 shot. Yeah, but I always pick it wrong first.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. What are you going to do?
I don't know. Nothing. I like audio plugs.
Yeah.
It's round. Stick it in.
Stick it in the hole.
You are victorious.
So if you're wondering why they didn't use HDMI, the big reason that they went with this was it's royalty-free. So to make this, you don't have to pay a fee to a governing body. And that's, to me, that's a big plus. That's worth having built in DRM that nobody will ever use anyway. So So Ryan, you had a story, something about Vonage, right?
Yeah, so if you followed any of this, and I have not followed it very much, basically Verizon took Vonage to task, saying, you guys are violating like every copyright we've ever even thought of. At one point, there was a total of like 48 different patent infringements they were claiming. Then I think that got distilled down to like 7, which were finally reviewed by a court. And then out of those 7, the court ruled that out of those, that there were 3 that in fact that Vonage had violated Verizon's copyright, although unknowingly, you know, or not maliciously.
Mm-hmm.
So that reduced the damages by quite a bit. So I think they still owe like $86 million in damages. So it's
which is like their profit from the beginning of time.
Yeah.
If so, that even.
I mean, Vonage is already in trouble, but
so I think they haven't even made a profit, have they?
I don't know. They don't have any of my money, but yeah. Hey, whatever. But 2 of the patents that they were violating was about billing. So
what?
You're billing patents, if that's your claim to fame, then I'm sorry.
Mm.
But, yeah, so Vonage is not happy. At one point, a judge had ordered them to not sign up any new customers, but I think that's since been rescinded. So we'll follow this, but I don't know, this is bad news for Vonage, and, you know, this is a chance for Verizon, who's already such a major player, to squeeze out, you know, a competitor. So, of course, it's going to happen.
So, my question to you is, well, have you ever used Vonage?
I have not.
So, I had it for approximately 5 seconds.
That must have been the 5 seconds I tried to call you and I couldn't get through.
Yeah. I had it, and, you know, to be fair, my internet service provider at the time was not very good as well, but during peak usage, I couldn't use my phone. So I'd get home from work. Peak usage is like 5 p.m. to like 7, 8 p.m.
Right.
So I couldn't even use my phone during those hours. So to me, it just didn't function. And I've heard this from other people online and in other podcasts I've listened to that, you know, it just drops out. You can't use it as your full-time phone still.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's like, why go with something like that when I could just use Skype on my PC for free or a very tiny fee instead of being locked into a monthly contract?
Right. But Skype seems to be doing okay.
Yeah, Skype, the audio quality is better than anything I've ever used. On Vonage, cell phone, anything else.
It's kind of crazy how nice it sounds.
I don't know why it's so good, but it blows me away. So
yeah. What else we got on the news?
So this is something we've kind of avoided talking about. I mean, we've mentioned Apple TV in the past a little bit, but we haven't really talked about it directly and as a product. And the reason we're bringing it up now is because of all the hacking that's been going on with the Apple TV. And to me, this story, I mean, it kind of made me sit back in my chair and just think for a minute because, well, so let me rewind a little bit. Apple TV comes out. It's a set-top box brought out by Apple to basically stream and sync with your iTunes library on your desktop.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So all your shows, your movies you download, you watch them on your television.
And it's pretty limited in what it can do. It only works with iTunes stuff, basically, and then a few other formats, MPEG-4 and H.264. No XVID, no DivX, none of the other popular online P2P client formats.
Right.
So the first thing people started doing when they got these is hacking them. You know, there's a USB port on the back labeled service. People are trying to boot devices from that. You know, it looked like it was wide open for use, and it has been. They've been able to pull off the OS, and they've booted the full OS 10 on these things. So it's a $300 Mac at this point once it's hacked.
Right.
And then stories came out with, oh no, Apple is releasing updates that's blocking all these things from working. Here's how you get around this, and you block these ports on your router, and you'll be fine. Well, Apple, let's see, what day was this? April 5th is when the story posts. So April 4th, Apple announced that they don't care if people hack the Apple TV. They're not going to fight against it, and just watch out for your warranty.
Yeah.
This was just shocking to me that a large company with a device like this, I mean, they're really like embracing open use, and I just was really happy to hear this, and I think it's a step in the right direction. Apple, to me, in my mind, is kind of known as a closed company, but with the DRM opening up last week, you know, Apple TV being allowed to be hacked and they're not going to do anything about it, it's like, wow, they're really opening things up where you see something like the 360 where they're not letting you do anything.
Right.
And the original Xbox where if you hacked it and you tried to get on live, you were banned forever.
Right.
And it's like, wow, you know, they're really listening to their customers and doing what they want. Now, they're only doing it on certain fronts. They're still pretty locked down as a company. You know, OS X is locked down. You can't use it on anything. You can't do what you want with it.
Yeah. But it is weird, like you're saying, the shift that's taken place. And I don't know if it's so much a shift, but at least in this case, traditionally, people that hack hardware and do projects like this were always PC type people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so now it's suddenly, oh, well, I'm modding the heck out of this Apple stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's kind of a cool thing.
It
now.
Is.
So,
it is. And it's really going to help Apple in the, I mean, this is where you start. You start with the geeks, the nerds, the sysadmins, the people who use this as their hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
And then who do you go for when you're grandma and you need a recommendation? You go to that person. So it's like they're almost developing this grassroots support for Apple. I mean, I'm seeing it on the web. I'm seeing more and more people converting to OS X. You know, they're like, it's not Windows or Linux anymore. It's Windows or Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's Linux or Apple.
And if you think about Parallels or Boot Camp, really.
Exactly.
I mean, the only people that would ever dual boot a box are people that are pretty technologically savvy.
Right.
You know, not just your average, you know, Joe Smith.
Exactly.
You know, in his home or his grandma. So I totally agree with what you're saying, that they're doing things that encourage the heavy tech people to get into their products. Mm-hmm. And then that's just going to spill over into all those people's families and everything. So,
and they have a long way to go. I mean, they're far from embracing the business side of things, the business crowd.
And they're attacking the other side too, which the people that aren't computer literate at all with the iPod.
The iPod and the Apple TV, which are super easy to use, and you just plug them in and they work.
Right.
Yeah, I thought for sure that Vista was going to kind of knock Apple off its seat a little bit, and I did hear some numbers that their sales were down a little bit because of Vista, but I feel like Vista has kind of failed enough that it's, if they can deliver with Leopard, then I think they could really, you could see a new Apple revolution like it was when it first came out.
But you know what, I think that's more of an opportunity cost issue. I don't think it's a choice of Vista over an Apple OS. I think it's basically people had money to spend. You know, Christmas is over.
Right.
Their checkbook recovered. They had a few hundred dollars to spend on something. So then they spent it on Vista, hoping that that would be awesome. And even if they were disappointed, now that money's spent and they can't throw that at a new iPod or a new Mac now. Yeah. So I think that was just, you know, Windows, it's been so long since Windows came out with anything new.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, this is it. We want to do a new Windows thing. So.
Yeah, I think the big missing piece of the puzzle is a business / medium priced home user machine. Something besides the iMac. We've talked about this before, but a desktop that's basic, medium cost, you know, right around $700, $800, $900 that can be updated and has an external monitor that you can choose. Businesses would use that, home users would use it. It's the missing piece. And
yeah. If I was Apple right now, and I know they're a hardware company, so software is not their focus.
Sure.
But I would have their software teams working on some sort of completely lethal workflow application that businesses would want.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, imagine like a PowerPoint combined with some sort of a Microsoft project so that you can see what everyone's working on, all the emails all integrated. And as a manager, you'd say, man, I wish we had those Macs, because then you could see what everybody's working on and they can all update every day and you can, you know, have version control and all your documents and your presentations. And I mean, if they had something like that to really attract the business customers, because right now there's no draw for business.
No, there's not at all. Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I'm a business, why do I want Apple? I probably don't.
Right.
You know, it's a liability at some point, but I don't know. I wish they would do something like that. But right now it's going to be the PCs, you know, at work.
Yeah.
Which is fine. PCs are great too.
So I faced a problem this week where I downloaded some video from the internet in XVID format, which, you know, was home movies that I converted online. Yeah, that's it. Anyway, this...
You know, your home movie looks suspiciously like 300.
Tonight, we died in hell!
So anyway, and I'm trying to play it on my Mac. And I'm trying to play it in QuickTime, and it doesn't play. And then Apple has this little thing that pops me up. Hey, download the XVID component for QuickTime. And it takes me to their site. I click the link. It takes me to the XVID site. And there's nothing there to download.
Way to go.
Yeah. So either I missed it completely, but either way, it led me on a search to find a nice little, you know, on the Windows side, the big one used to be, what was that codec pack?
K-Lite?
Yeah, the K-Lite codec pack.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you downloaded, right?
Right.
Until it was filled with viruses later on.
And I still download it.
But that was the one. I was like, there's got to be one of those for OS X for QuickTime. Because, yeah, I could have downloaded VLC and used that, but I really like the QuickTime look. And, you know, I've got QuickTime Pro, so I can do full screen. And it's got, I like the interface. So I wanted to keep that. So I did a little search, and I was browsing Dig and some other sites, and I started seeing people talk a lot about Parian. It's P-E-R-I-A-N. We'll have a link in the show notes, of course. But what this is a free and open source QuickTime component add-on. Basically, you download this file, you open it up, and it has this little QuickTime component pack, and it has a shortcut to your QuickTime components folder. You just drag it into that folder, it installs, and then boom, your Xvid, your DivX, let's see what other formats, there's Flash Screen Video, MSMPEG-4, Sorensen, H.263, you know, a lot of the big online video formats are supported. So basically this just lets you play a lot of the videos that you probably already have downloaded or will download in the future, and lets you play them in QuickTime and keep that nice Apple look. It's very simple, you don't have to worry about spyware or anything else, and it's easy to install, so you can't really go wrong. It's free, and so go check it out, download it, and give us some feedback in the forums what you think.
This week we wanted to take a few minutes to talk about communication between coworkers at work and all the different types of things we have available to us in the modern corporate environment, and which of these communication strategies are more or less useful. So Joe, you had an anecdote about today. You know, why don't you start us off with that?
So part of what I think kind of brought this on and made us think we could really talk about this today, both of us kind of have started using IM a little bit more at work. I've moved to a different lab, and to be in better contact without just using delayed email and don't really want to make calls, we've started using the IM that's available to us there. And we've gotten a couple other people on board with that, and I was actually IMing another guy at work about just, you know, BS about the weekend and what we were doing, and just, you know, stuff that...
Water cooler talk.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Water cooler talk. They're very good. But at the exact same time, we were emailing back and forth about business. And, you know, I was providing some IP addresses for him to use for some test beds. And neither of us broke this unspoken protocol of IM stayed with just water cooler talk, and email stayed with just business. And it was occurring in the exact same time, you know, emailing back and forth, which email has gotten to the point where if you're in the same location, it goes almost instantaneous. And it was just bizarre as I was sitting here doing this and realizing that, you know, we have started to segment some of our communication into these different forms, and yet also at the same time we're starting to break free of those. I mean, IM has started to become more of a business associated practice. Right. More and more companies are starting to use it to communicate. But it started out as just a very casual thing that you did with friends at night or in college. So it's like we're still not used to using it for business, so it's like we don't make that connection sometimes. And I think that was just, that got us talking about that a little bit more, along with some other things. And it was very interesting to me to see that kind of unfold in front of my eyes, and even though I knew it was happening, I couldn't get myself to break that unspoken protocol. Mm-hmm. Yet, you know, the two of us email back and forth all the time about, or I am back and forth about work stuff all the time.
Right.
But I feel like that's different because, you know, we work so closely together all the time.
Well, the thing was, for me, I never really cared about the IM because we were in the same office.
Right.
So when we're working on something, or, you know, if we're both working on a problem on a server, I can just turn my chair on and go, dude, what are we going to do about this, you know?
Yeah.
But once you started moving to the other lab, yeah, I'm looking for a substitute for that real-time comms, you know, which, you know, email is kind of an understood that it's asynchronous. You answer email when you have time.
Exactly.
And it's almost always business-related. So I'm looking for more of that real-time exchange of, you know, let's try this, let's do that. You know, we're meeting for lunch, yes, no, you know, when is this meeting? So IM fills that closer to a real-time role,
right,
without it having to be actually synchronous comms.
Well, and it's like the difference, you know, I never used to understand the difference between a standard cell phone call and then like the Nextel push-to-talk type thing.
Right.
until I used one. And it's like you lose that formality. Like email versus IM. Email is very formal. I mean, compared to a letter, it's not formal, but compared to IM, it's very formal. You know, you have,
right.
You say what you want and you describe it in a little bit in detail instead of like, hey, I need an IP address real quick. And that's what you do in IM.
Right.
And then like a phone call, you know, I'm not going to want to call you because there's like this order of conversation that everybody has to go through when you call somebody on the phone.
Hey, Joe, it's Ryan. How's it going?
Right. Yeah. And then like the push to talk type thing, it's just like, you know, you beep in real quick, you say what you need, they say back what the answer, and then you're done. There's no goodbye. There's no, all right, man, I'll catch you later. It's just, it's over.
Right.
And I think that's the same kind of separation we're going to start to see with like IM versus email at work.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing too is that I think with the whole push to talk telephone is that you never really feel like you're through with that person.
It's like yeah.
You go to the
yeah.
bathroom and you're reading a magazine trying to do your business. Bleak. And then the bee's like, hey man,
yeah,
what
that
you
is kind of annoying.
Yeah, it's like I'm trying
actually,
to like go to the bathroom.
I actually had a bad experience with that once. There's a couple settings on those phones. I used to have one for a job I used to have, and there's a setting where you can like basically if you don't enable the setting, they can push and just start talking to you. So I was like at home watching a movie with my wife and this guy like beeped in on me at like 10 o'clock at night asking me something about work, and he kept rambling on and on forever, and it was like in the other room. And
oh,
it made
man.
Me so, I was so angry because of that, because it was just like this invasion of my personal space
mm-hmm.
where like he just showed up at my door almost.
Well, it's like he threw a brick through your window and stuck his face and started asking you work
yeah.
stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of bad.
And I think there's a danger of that with IM too, because like you were saying, you know, email you answer when you want. IM, you kind of, if it looks like they're there, you expect a response very quickly. Right.
Yeah, right. Because if the IM client, if the instant messenger client tells you they're available and you ask a question and they don't, minutes go by.
Right.
You're like, well, what are they doing that's so important that they can't answer
yeah,
my question?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And the point of failure here is that it's another thing to manage. So like with email, you don't, you know, the only time you set an away message is if you go on vacation for 2 weeks. Right.
Right.
Well, now you've got to remember if you go into lunch, you've got to sign out of your email client or set it to away. I mean, there's the auto away that works pretty well, but sometimes it doesn't work.
Because I know today I was walking out the door and I hear bling,
yeah.
which means I just, it's like,
see?
So I turn around, yeah. I unlock my screensaver.
So it's like another set of like user training that we're going to have to go through
mm-hmm.
because there's already a guy on our list who is online all the time. I come into work, and I know he's not there.
He's permanently
yet somehow
available.
He's available.
Right. So he's disabled his away after 5 minutes
yeah,
of inactivity
exactly.
or whatever.
And so now, I mean, I've sent him a couple things, and I've never heard back. So it's like I've just abandoned all hope of ever reaching him through that. So
yeah.
it's like that point of communication, I've lost trust in using that with him. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, regaining that won't take much time, but still.
Right. And it's weird how it sort of stratifies that the young hip crowd
mm-hmm.
is very into IM because they
right.
probably grew up with it,
sure.
you know, no big deal.
Sure.
And then, you know, as you go older, you have the email users.
Right.
You know, and as you get up into the baby boomers, they're like all about the telephone.
That's right.
You know, and maybe email.
And then older than that, like, you know, beyond the baby boomers, it was you either have a meeting or you don't talk to me.
Well, yeah, I've got old gray guys walking into my office, you know,
mm-hmm.
with their World War II shrapnel in their leg, telling me stuff face to face.
Yeah,
you know? And this guy walked probably 10
yeah.
minutes to get to my office to tell me something.
It's like, hey, come pick up your paycheck stub instead of
right.
mail it to me or get it in my email. And then beyond the IM, you know, we have this future group coming up that, you know, they're graduating college right now, where it's all about text messaging. You know, IM is too slow.
Yeah.
Text message immediate to my hip, you know, no matter where I am.
Right. Well, I can tell you, personally, the telephone is my least favorite because I come in late every day. I take a long
right.
lunch. I leave early. And when I am at work, I'm maybe not at my desk. I'm
right,
fixing
sure.
a computer. I'm
crawling around under the floor.
I went to go get a Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, I'm not going to be there. And don't make me come back to my desk and see a light on my phone and have to dial into my voicemail and put my pass. No. Yeah. And the other thing, too, about that, if you left me some long, dumb voicemail that's detailed, mm-hmm. now you've made me play it a couple of times, mm-hmm. find a pencil, get some sticky notes or recycle paper. I'm writing all this stuff down. It's like, you know, Ryan, call me back at 555-1245.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm trying to figure out the phone number you said, you know, when you could have just emailed me.
Yeah.
And I would have had a permanent record of when you asked for it, what you wanted.
It's like we've degraded below the state of caveman who could chip it into a tablet.
Right. So that's, and the other thing is, I almost feel like the telephone is kind of shady mm-hmm. because there is no record.
Yeah.
And I have people that I don't get a good vibe and they're asking me for stuff.
Yeah.
That if their manager knew that they were asking me for this, probably wouldn't go over very well.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Ryan, could you bring over that laptop? Because, you know, I still haven't found that other laptop that we lost. And could you bring it over to the other building and just so we can use it for this demo? And that's a phone mail. Because mm-hmm. he knows I can't forward that to his manager and go, tell your guy, find the missing mm-hmm. laptop today, you know.
Yeah.
And so to me, phone always just seems sort of sleazy. I hate using phone.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, and actually I found more and more lately, you know, depending on the age group I'm dealing with, of course, but I've found that I actually get, you know, it used to be the phone call was like the instant communication mm-hmm. and the email was slow.
Right.
Now, I'll get an email back faster than I'll get a voicemail returned.
Yeah.
Because it's like they know that they don't have to spend an extra couple minutes with that whole interchange of talking and then, like, you know, there's no awkwardness, there's no misunderstanding. It's you type it out, you send it back real quick, and you're done. You can, 3 seconds later, you've moved on to a completely different project or topic.
Right. Well, it's kind of like recently, when I was trying to revise, and part of this was due to some of the good advice we got from like the 43 folders and the Life Hacker mm-hmm. and about how to totally change your whole way that you look at email. And I started doing this. I mean, my inbox has like 6 messages in it right
now. Yeah.
So it's like you get a request in the email, you answer it right then, you hit send, and then you delete that because mm-hmm. that is over.
Right.
You've dealt with it. And until they reply going, well, what did you mean by this? Or, well, what about the next day? And mm-hmm. until you get that next question, you don't have to think about it
exactly.
because you've dealt with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like your inbox becomes your to-do list instead of
right.
having a separate to-do list that filters your email inbox.
Right.
Which never works.
One more thing to manage.
Yeah. Yeah. So a couple things we haven't talked about that I think we could maybe cover real quick. The what happened to video conferencing? And do people even care about that anymore?
Yeah. You know, I think it's kind of the whole purpose of all this stuff, I think, is to take the other person as much out of it
yeah.
as possible. Because it's so much easier to, if you have a boss that makes you nervous, or there's some guy you don't like, or some lady who's always being offended by the way you say something, it's so much safer just to send an impersonal email,
mm-hmm.
get what you want, and you're done. It's almost like putting on the rubber gloves in the surgery room, you know?
Yeah.
To keep them at arm's length. And to have someone's face pop up on your screen, you know, and you're just like, ugh, there they are. They're looking at me right now. You know, that's totally uncomfortable, man.
Well, and I think like you're saying, it really formalizes the whole process more. I mean, that's like, to me, a video conference would be almost on par with a face-to-face, if not even a little above,
mm-hmm.
because it's almost like a formal meeting. I mean, a face-to-face can be a little casual, but like a video conference, you've got to set it all up, and it's very formal. And I know it's still used if you're having to try to have like a long-distance meeting with a different country or something.
Right.
There's a place for it, but you know, you see like the reason I thought of this was like in Back to the Future, they talked about like, you know, you would have like the video call with your little hologram headset or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, people talk about having video conferencing on their cell phones.
Yeah.
I just don't want that. I mean, I'm getting more and more impersonal. You know, I'm sending a text message that's not even English, you know?
Right.
It's
exactly.
Like, why would I want to make it more complicated where I have to have an even more formalized greeting
and comb your
how
hair,
are you? Yeah,
put on clothes.
You know, so I think the video conference has its place. I think it's found its niche, and I don't think it's going anywhere else.
So here's the win too. You know, at 8 o'clock when I've just rolled out of bed, and my manager's emailing me, I can go in, check my work email, and start answering questions while the shower's heating up.
There you go.
You know, when my toast is in the toaster, and he doesn't know I'm not at work unless he comes to my office.
Yeah.
For that face to face that we don't want for me, for obvious reasons. But then there's the cell phone. And I know in our case, and most of the people we work with, we pay for our own cell phones.
Right.
So, you know, that brings up some interesting stuff.
Yeah, it does. Well, and especially I think this applies directly to sysadmins because we're never in our office. You know,
right.
We may be by the server, but a lot of times the server's not in the same room as your office, or you're running cables, you're fixing somebody's desktop or whatever. So you start giving out your cell phone number to like a few people that you're pretty good friends with, and you're like, hey, man, if you need anything, here's my cell phone.
Or the top manager.
Or the top manager who you want to raise from, right?
Right.
But then what happens?
Yeah.
Then that phone number gets passed around to people you don't necessarily like.
Yeah.
And I think you've had more experience with this than I have, like especially with your pager, right? I mean...
Well, to me, it's a tragedy that I still have a pager. True. To me, a pager is like a fax machine. It should not exist. Yeah. It's like the woolly mammoth of technology. It should be extinct in the ground, in a museum. But for whatever reason, part of my organization, oh, we need to page you.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. But that aside, well, here's this other thing, too. And I'm being totally schizophrenic, and I know that. But so back to your number getting spread around.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they give it. It's that you're in the middle of something. You call them back on your phone.
Yeah.
And now they've got your number.
Oh, yes.
You know what I mean? Especially if they paid you from their cell, you called their cell, and you're in their cell forever now.
Yep.
So that's a tragedy.
And actually, I had a recent experience with this. So, you know, we've already mentioned I moved to a new office, and the guy who is in there is on his way out to move to another project. But he's still there, and I called him... and he got my cell phone number.
Oh, no.
And he called me, like, on... So last Friday, I was in a different building doing some other things, and he called me asking me if I was going to be in the building because somebody was coming by, and he wanted to make sure someone was there.
Yes.
And it's like...
These are my minutes.
What are you doing, man? I don't
know. Yeah.
So that was... I mean, so it happens all the time, and I'm pretty liberal with my cell phone. But it's getting to a point where so many people have it now, and it's getting called so often because I've moved and people don't know where I am and they don't know what number to call me at, so they're always calling me on my cell phone. It's just, it's getting frustrating. And the fact that I know that, yeah, I could turn it in for reimbursement, but that's like a whole nother red tape mess.
That's a whole thing, yeah.
Yeah.
The cell phone that you pay for is definitely lethal, you know, especially when someone calls you late at night, it's on your personal line, they're asking you questions about work, and
right.
You're just like, man, this is a total invasion of, you know, my minutes, my privacy, you know, I'm off, I don't want to deal with this right now.
Yeah, and yet on the other hand, you know, you want to be looked upon as the person who's, like, working hard, and, you know, you're willing to go the extra 20 feet, you know, maybe not the extra mile, the extra 20 feet.
Right.
So, you know, you give your cell phone to your boss or the important people. And
right.
It's like, man, where do you draw the line and how do you battle that? I don't really see any way to do it, though.
Yeah. Well, I think the main thing is, like, if you do call someone's personal line and if they are paying for it, just, like you said, you use it very sparingly, only in emergency. And usually you can get away with it if you're doing something that benefits them.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, Bob, I had that report you wanted, but I don't know what your email address is.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, something like that, they'll almost always forgive you, you know, but anything else is probably not a good idea.
So let's kind of wrap this up. It's like, so what is, what can we take away from all this? One, I think, is that you do need to kind of segment how you use each piece of communication technology, I think.
Right.
Each has its best form, and try to make sure you stick to that because it's designed, it works well with that, and if you try to use it for something else, like if you try to use email for a constant flow conversation, well, it doesn't really work well for that. You can, you know, somebody walks away and then it stops and you lose all touch. And the other thing, too, is, you know, it's kind of, as a sysadmin, it's our job to deliver most of these forms of technology, so... You know, we're kind of on the bleeding edge, and I feel like it's kind of almost our responsibility to show people the best way to use it and to show the advantages and disadvantages and
maybe lead by example.
Right. Well, that's going to wrap up one more episode of Angry Admins. Go to our website, check it out, angryadmins.com. We will post the show notes. We also have a link to our forums on there if you want to have a conversation with us about anything we talked about this week or in the past. That's the place to do it. We also, on our website, we have some archives. So if you are interested in this episode and you're new to the show, go back and listen to some of our old episodes, except don't listen to episode one. It wasn't very good.
Yeah, stay to the recent episode.
Yeah. But either way, thanks for tuning in, and I want to thank everybody for listening. Again, my name is Joe Bibby.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
Stay angry.